second case of the day, Montesina Grain versus FTD. Mr. McFarland.
May it please the court, in addition to being referred to in the Marine battle hymn, Montezuma is a small town in central Indiana, a little bit north of Terre Haute. And the Petitioner Grain Company is named after that town, and the county is the county in which the town is located. The petition seeks to set aside the Surface Transportation Board's refusal to reopen decisions that authorized the CSX Railroad to abandon some tracks at or near Montezuma. And the standard of review is abuse of discretion. Review of railroad cases admittedly can be dry as dust if you're looking at technical issues such as railroad costs and the like. But this case is exceptional, it really is, because it involves one of the exceptional grounds that's so important in the law, material misrepresentation. The issue is whether there's evidence of that material misrepresentation here that was missing in the City of Wausau case that this court had in front of it 20 years ago, and whether that misrepresentation led the county not to file a protest that it otherwise would have filed against this abandonment. When the abandonment was proposed, the county was planning to establish an industrial park along the rail line a little bit west of U.S. Route 36. And in a pre-filing, the CSX Railroad had indicated that it was going to abandon all the way west to Hillsdale. But when the county made its objections known to that, the railroad scaled back to Western Terminus. And it filed the application as if there was not going to be any opposition to it. The county looked at the abandonment application to see where the Western Terminus was, and it saw that schematic drawing that I have in the short appendix at page 7. And it had little crosshatches on it to set what the abandonment line was. And those crosshatches ended at the west at what was marked U.S. Route 36, U.S. Highway 36. So the county concluded on that basis that that's where the abandonment was going to end. And that was consistent, it thought, with the scale back of the Western Terminus and the fact that the application was filed not expecting any opposition. The STB and the respondents have argued that there was information in the milepost numbers that should have led the county to know that the abandonment actually extended a little bit west of U.S. 36. But I submit to your honors that these milepost designations don't do much good to the public, because there is no milepost marker on the county road that actually was the Western Terminus. Person couldn't go look at that county road and determine what the milepost marker was.
Could I just ask you, CSX claims that after the county objected to the removal of the stretch of track between U.S. 36 and mile marker 191.41, it offered to leave the rail intact and sell it to the county.
That's true.
Why didn't the county respond to this offer?
Because, first, they didn't think they had to buy it. They thought that the railroad had a duty to continue to operate it. And secondly, because if they were going to leave the line in place, the county wasn't really ready to establish that industrial park yet, and it satisfied its interest that the line was in place. Another telling point, I think, is that schematic drawing didn't show the county road at all, where the line supposedly ended. But the county filed a comment with the Interstate Commerce Commission, which is the Surface Transportation Board's predecessor, and it was pretty apparent that the county was mistaken, that they didn't know what the western terminus of the line was. But they did submit a group of letters and a circulatory petition that made it clear that the residents of the county were violently opposed to any abandonment that included the trackage west of U.S. 36. And in response to that, CSX trial attorney wrote the Interstate Commerce Commission, and he said flat out, don't worry about it. This abandonment does not extend west of U.S. 36. Those statements were false. And the county relied on them. There's no question that the county relied on those statements and that they had a right to rely on them. After all, this schematic drawing was an official part of the record, and the attorney that made these false representations was the same attorney that filed the abandonment application. And there was detriment here, because in view of the representations, the county refrained from filing a protest that it otherwise would have filed if it knew what the actual facts were. The respondents argue that they avoid those factual issues, and they argue that nevertheless the STB just didn't have any jurisdiction to reopen because this abandonment was consummated a long time ago. But the true fact is that the STB itself has stated that it does have jurisdiction in cases of fraud and misrepresentation and mistake.
I thought the STB's view was that it had jurisdiction in the case of fraud on the agency. But you're not alleging that any fraud was committed on the STB.
That's correct. But they have gone farther in the Napa Valley case and said that they have the jurisdiction for fraud and mistake. And the way they define mistake, it equals innocent misrepresentations.
And what's the statutory basis of this?
49 U.S.C. 722B. And it provides that the board may change, suspend, or set aside any action. It doesn't, unlike 722C, it does not contain limited grounds of material error or changed circumstance or new evidence. It's broader than that. And I think an administrative agency like a court has an inherent authority at any time to correct the prior action that
actually,
was...
Actually, courts have no such inherent authority at any time. There are all sorts of temporal limitations.
Well, I was thinking Judge Easterbrook of Rule 60B of the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure that allow a court to correct the action after judgment. That was my reference.
It has temporal limitations in it, as you may know.
It does, I know that.
Yeah, speaking of temporal limitations... Why did your clients wait 6 years to oppose the abandonment?
It was a pragmatic decision, Judge Wildner. The railroad was willing to leave the trackage in place. There would have been no irreversible injury to the county. They weren't represented by counsel. They didn't know that would be held against them in the future. That was the reasoning. But it is, certainly it would have been easier for all concerned if they'd acted quickly, more quickly. So here was a situation where we feel like the STB erred in, not only erred, abused its discretion in failing to take into account these misrepresentations, and there was... procedural error involved in that the county didn't protest when it otherwise would have.
So the board, Mr. McFarland, did recognize that arguably there could have been misstatements, right, when they denied the reopening.
I'm sorry, Judge Flom.
The board recognized that there might have been a misleading presentation. So it isn't as if, we do know that they at least looked at it.
They did.
And then they referenced what they call the explicit milepost reference.
Correct, Judge Flom.
How do we substitute our judgment that their reference to explicit milepost references is somehow abuse of discretion? That is, the three might have, in a different setting, come to a different conclusion. It does seem to suggest that they reviewed or were aware of the county's complaint, dated though it may be, and I'm not speaking to that aspect of it. But we really have to find that judgment of knowing what the issue that you asked to be reviewed was looked at and was somehow so far off the mark in their conclusion, though one might differ with it. That's really a tough hill to climb.
Well, it is. It is, and so is abuse of discretion as a standard.
No, I understand.
I acknowledge that. But there are two reasons. One is that the STB dismissed the misrepresentations on the grounds that they weren't deliberate. They felt that if there was a misrepresentation and it wasn't deliberate, that wasn't a problem. I don't agree with that, and I don't think the court will agree with that. And secondly, there was the finding by the STB that the error, the misrepresentations, if you want to call them that, were not egregious. But how much more egregious can you be if the misrepresentations led a party not to protest something that adversely affected them? So I think there's the abuse of discretion there, even taking into account this technical idea about milepost designation.
How explicit would you say they were? I mean, would you suggest that they were not explicit, the milepost designation?
All the milepost designations were accurate, no question about it. And if, for example, the county had called up CSX at the time and said, hey, where's milepost 191.41? And got an answer, we wouldn't be here. But they didn't have a duty to do that. The duty was the railroad companies to accurately reflect in the drawing where the Western Terminus was, and then for its counsel to accurately describe in response to the filings what that Western Terminus was.
Why didn't the county do as CSX suggested and take that west segment that CSX offered to donate and then use, you know, its power of eminent domain to condemn three quarters of a mile?
Yeah, good question, Judge Wilner. We felt like we got sandbagged the second time on that one. It was going to be donated free, and the agreement was carried out, and then the CSX says, wait a minute, it's not free. We're only going to give you 62% of it. It's like going into the drugstore and having a coupon for a free tube of toothpaste, and the ballgame says, no, you can't have that. I mean, that's the reason we did it. And we felt like there was a principle involved, and we were going to appeal that principle. Unless there's anything else, I submit the rest of my case on the brief.
All right, thank you, Mr.
McFarland. Thank you.
Ms. Taylor?
May it please the court, Alice Saylor representing the Surface Transportation Board and the United States. With me at the council table is David Coburn, counsel for intervener CSX Transportation, who will be available if there are any questions of him. What we have left of this case is petitioner's challenge of the abandonment in two sections of a small, less than 2 mile section of track in Indiana. The first abandonment was authorized in 1994. Let me start there. And let me start with jurisdiction, because that's a pretty good starting point. The board under 722B clearly has jurisdiction to reopen, change, any decision that it's made other than an abandonment. Abandonments are a special case because it has been clearly held by the Supreme Court in Hayfield Northern and Preseau that once rail property is abandoned, the board's jurisdiction ends. State law then governs the disposition of the property.
This is going to be a very naive question, but wouldn't it make sense for the STB to maintain jurisdiction to void abandonment authorization when that authorization is obtained or based on false or misleading information?
Well, that's a hard question to disagree with, Your Honor. I'd like to take a moment then to review the facts with regard to the 94 abandonment, if I could. The abandonment was of a 7.34-mile section of track, and the mileposts are clearly described. The left-hand or western 0.71 miles is the part at issue here, and the confusion arose as to whether it ended at Highway 36 or County Road 288. The board had a record with some facts that the board acknowledged in its decision were somewhat difficult. The easy cases don't generally come before the board. It adjudicates the tougher cases. The board looked at the whole record, and here's what's in the record. Park County wrote to the ICC on July 27th. Really, that letter was about imposing a trail use condition and a public use condition, which the ICC did. They then, Park County, said, "We would be concerned in the future if you were to abandon between these two specific mileposts," and that wasn't what was being abandoned. They never said, they never asked where the terminus was. They didn't give a road reference. They gave the milepost reference. And that was really what that letter was about. They mentioned their plans to build an industrial park, but never said exactly where it was going to be, and I believe the record is clear that it still isn't clear where it's going to be. West segment, east segment, the other side of Highway 36. The CSX attorney wrote back on August 3rd to the ICC. I'm not sure why. I don't believe he was required to do so. The end of that letter from CSX's attorney said they were thinking about the trail use request. Maybe that's why he wrote. I don't know. But he did two other things in that letter. First, he said, as the board found was accurate, that the section between those two specific mileposts that the county had raised were not involved in this abandonment. That was true.
About the August 3rd, 1990?
The August 3rd from CSX to the ICC.
Well, but, I mean, that letter states that the area served by rail from U.S. 36 west to Hillsdale is not included in CSXT's proposed abandonment. I mean, that's a fairly major, maybe albeit unintentional, misrepresentation, isn't it?
That is the tough part, and the board acknowledged that that letter was not a model of clarity. That's on the second page. The first page clearly stated that mileposts 191.41 to 192.58 weren't involved. That was true. The conflict is that on the second page, he did clearly say that the service would be maintained to the west side of Highway 36. The board acknowledged that in its decision, that that was a difficult fact, but decided, based on all the facts on the record, that this was not such a material misrepresentation. And remember, Mr. McFarland just said they could have called up. They were exploring the possibility of using the 7.34 miles as a trail. The county engineer could have called the railroad engineer and mapped the track. I'm not sure why that wasn't done. They never made the inquiry.
But you're not arguing that they had the responsibility to do that?
No, I am not. But if they felt confused, there would have been ways to get information.
But, I mean, like, why would they be confused? I mean, since there aren't actual mile markers stuck in the ground, you know, at 191.41 or, 190?
That's right. There are not.
How are they to know that CSX, you know, was seeking to abandon the rail line all the way west to the county road?
The three-quarters of a mile to 288. It's true that there are not posted signs on right-of-way, that's always true. It's true of every abandonment. So you could say it raises the issue that you have to find out and ask. The map is another issue, and I don't mean to make too big a deal about where the X's are, because you can obviously argue that two ways. The center of the X, the part where the X crosses, is on 36, but those left-hand ends of the X's are to the left. The board found that the X's extended a fraction of an inch to the left and probably should have gone a little further. Maps are required to be filed, but they are on a scale that doesn't show you inch by inch where the abandonment will be, and so I think you probably should ask if it's that important. But that was the difficult fact that the board had to grapple with regard to the 94.
Isn't Montezuma Grain in a catch-22 situation here? They don't want to make the improvements that are necessary to operate the grain elevator unless they have rail service. But in order to get rail service, they have to have an operating business so that they can submit a request for service that, you know, is specific enough to trigger the common carrier duty. And help me if I'm wrong, but I thought that your brief implied that their request couldn't trigger the common carrier duty unless they have an operating business. So
the timeline is important here.
Yeah.
Montezuma Grain is on the west segment. The west segment received rail service until 97, when that business, the grain elevator, closed down. In the next year, after there had been no call for any trains to move for almost a year, CSX took out the diamond because it's an expensive thing to maintain on the main line. It could have been reinstalled. It was almost 3 years, but far more than two, that there was no call for rail service on the west segment, no cars to move, the grain elevator was out of business. At that point, CSX filed for the 2 year out of service. There had been an embargo placed on that line sometime in 99. It had expired before the letter of December of 2000, but it's really irrelevant. There had been no call for anyone to move a single car of grain. The business had closed in 97, and so CSX qualified for abandonment. There is, under the statute, a limit on how long a railroad has to keep a line available for traffic that might someday materialize, but there's no definite plan, there's no definite amount of traffic, and the statute favors allowing railroads to redeploy their assets elsewhere that they can be better used, and I think this line is a perfect example. On the east segment, we're over a decade that there has been no rail traffic to move, and on the west segment, we're over 5 years. And if you look at what the petitioners seem to really be asking, it's that the board would undo abandonment authority, so they would get a chance to try to make a case that CSX should be required to maintain in place a rail line over which nobody wants to ship anything, but maybe they will in the future. And the board looked at the history, the difficult facts, made a decision, fully articulated its reasons, I think, on a careful record, and I would ask that their decision be affirmed.
Thank you, Sarah. McFarland?
In rebuttal, Your Honors, I would just ask when you decide this case to take another look at the City of Wausau case, which was the same case 20 years ago, and see what is in this record that wasn't in City of Wausau. The specific evidence of material misrepresentations, detriment, there was no detriment in Wausau. There was a hearing in Wausau in which the city was represented by other people. And those are the distinguishing factors that I think compel reversal here, despite the affirmance in City of Wausau. Thank you, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Fowler. Thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement.